Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of pro wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. The crux of this show, folks, is we're going to be taking a deep dive into this NXT rebooting, rebranding, whatever you want to call it, and coming up with some good and bad that could come out of this, as well as talk about some WWE issues, including both television networks reportedly quite upset with them. Before we get to any of that, I am aware, of course, that NWA Power put on their women's pay-per-view, NWA Empower, last night. I did not see it. I did not get a chance to see it. However, I got a lot of reports from people telling me it was decent, telling me it was pretty good, and the big thing that came out of it, of course, is that Awesome Kong, after her match, reportedly has retired from the ring. Now, I don't know if she could be coerced back. My assumption is yes. This is someone who was given a brief stint in AEW, and they just never renewed her contract. Probably be coerced back, unless there's some kind of a medical condition or something I don't know about. But that's not been said. She's just officially announced her retirement based upon, I guess, just deciding she doesn't want to do it anymore. Someone who probably didn't get the recognition that they deserved. I know she was portrayed basically as just a big, huge person who, you know, didn't have a ton of wrestling skill or whatever, but honestly, she was one of the better, bigger competitors, especially in the women's division. One of the better, bigger competitors to come along. So unless there is a mega contract somewhere, which would pretty much have to come from WWE, I would imagine AEW's obviously not interested. They didn't re-sign her. I don't think Impact is interested, or they would have jumped on it immediately. She's obviously not interested in staying in NWA where she's going to just be paid on a match-by-match basis. So it pretty much, I think, have to be WWE, and I don't see it. I really don't. So if this is it for Awesome Kong, she had a good run, Mike. She just maybe just never got the credit she deserved.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, think about it this way. Would she be a better choice, even at her late age, than, say, I don't know, Nia Jax? You know,
I would say yes.
At a bigger wrestler. Oh, yes. Even though I did read someplace about 4, 5, 6 months ago that she had lost about 30 pounds, or 30, 40 pounds, something like that. That still's not going to matter. I mean, if she's, what, at the time, you know, about 280 pounds, and she loses 30 pounds, you know, I mean, it's good for her, but she's still a bigger wrestler, you know. And look, she would be a
still
great
somebody else in that division. You know, maybe Nia Jax would be close, but she'd still be bigger. And now, of course, you have Piper Niven, who's bigger. She's not that big, but she's bigger. I just don't see the WWE doing it because all of a sudden they're shifting their direction, even in WWE now, saying we want younger guys but bigger guys. And, well, she's big, but she's not young. So I don't necessarily see the WWE making a big offer for her. And also, before we get into some of the WWE problems, let's talk about this recent, I guess, tweet by Paige, openly admitting her contract is up in, I think, June of 2022. And she said, well, I don't know if the WWE has any interest in re-signing me. If they do, I would want to make my Twitch channel part of that contract process. And it just got me thinking. Now, I am not someone who's hating on Paige. Not at all. When she was in her heyday here in the WWE, I thought she was one of their better performers. But here's the simple truth. She can't wrestle anymore. She's said, well, I might want to get back in the ring, but the WWE's not going to let her. And they're not using her for anything. She's not a manager. She's not an on-screen personality. The last thing they used her for was that Fox show, and they've canceled that. Why in the world is she collecting a paycheck? We're talking about a WWE that said, we have to make serious cuts to keep our profit margin up. But you're not cutting people who are doing absolutely zero? Why is that? Now, I know if they cut her, they still got to come to terms with her contract, pay her for the remainder, or come to some kind of terms. I get it. And maybe the solution's just as simple as, well, it's not that far away, so we might as well just ride it out. But you would think, if you knew that, you would say, well, we're going to be freeing up Paige. We're going to be freeing up a couple of other people whose contracts expire and we're not going to re-sign them. So we can re-sign a Ruby Riott. We can re-sign a talent, or keep them at least, if not re-sign them. You let Bray Wyatt go, and you're going to keep Paige? And then you're going to tell me, well, we're doing this for the good of the company to keep our profit margins high and to keep only the necessary people on the payroll. Okay, explain to me what Paige's necessary job is at this point. For that matter, explain to me what even Marie's necessary job description is. You brought her in quite obviously for a one-shot feud with Piper Niven. When this is over, where does she go? She still can't wrestle. We've clearly seen it. So where does she go? So, you know, for this you let Lana go. For this you let Ruby Riott go. So you couldn't have said, well, we're not going to sign Eva Marie. We're going to come to some negotiating thing with Paige to buy out of her contract so we can keep Ruby Riott. We can keep Lana, both of which were contributing. Both of which were contributing. To get a girl who has to come in with an actual wrestler because she can't wrestle. And to keep one who is doing nothing but making, you know, content on Twitch. Doesn't make much sense, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when they brought Eva Marie in, all she was this eye candy for everybody to see, to look at. When you had Lana, Ruby Riott.
That's what it feels like. It feels like they just brought her in to be eye candy. And Mike, once again, I'm not a Paige, hater, but what has she done? What is she doing?
Right. What, yeah. I mean, look. And it's not like she couldn't go back across and you know take a shot at wrestling in her mom's in Bellatrix or whatever, you know, over across the pond. I know she probably doesn't want to do that because it might be considered a step down for her. But maybe that's the only place she can get a shot at wrestling. You know, and that's the thing. She may want to. At some point, I mean, she's what, in her 20s, right? She sees guys like the fact that they're allowing Edge with basically the same neck injury that she had back in the ring, right? They see that.
Yep.
She sees that Christian is back in the ring, right? So.
Yep.
Well, if you guys or AEW are going to allow those two guys in the back in the ring, well, why not me? You know, I guess you want some Twitch channel. I get that, okay? I get that, you know? And there's probably going to be a company that's going to look at her and say, okay, you can come in and you can have your Twitch channel. Yeah, there's going to be somebody that's going to do that, right? Is she going to be willing to possibly take a step down? And here's the deal. We talk about all the time Charlotte Flair being a good addition for AEW. and Ruby Riott. Well, what about Paige? You know, they could say, you know, you could come in and manage and get in the ring every so often, you know. She'd be a great addition for that women's division in AEW.
I guess what I never quite understood about the WWE is you have Sonya Deville, who, to my knowledge, could get back in the ring today. I've heard nothing about her having an injury. I've heard nothing about her having any problems with actually wrestling. As a matter of fact, I heard the opposite, that she was going to wrestle. So why in the world, if you did want to put Adam Pearce with someone, didn't you just put it with Paige? Why didn't you do that? It doesn't make any sense to keep people on the payroll who are doing absolutely zero. Now, I can understand keeping people on the payroll who you aren't really promoting. You know, you got to have some guys on the payroll who are jobbers and who are going to, you know, build up your talent. I get that. You have to have some enhancement talent. Paige isn't doing anything at all. Nothing. Zero. And they're not even attempting to do anything with her. So do I think they're going to re-sign her? No, I do not. Do I think she's going to go somewhere else and perhaps lace up the boots again? I don't know. I really don't know. Paige is a confusing person because sometimes she talks as if, well, I'm being held back by the WWE because I want to really get in that ring and show everybody what I can do, and I can't wait to do it because sitting on the sidelines is not what I want to do. And then when she's pressed a little, it's kind of like, well, I can't wrestle. I mean, my doctor told me I could be paralyzed. I don't want to take that chance. Well, you got to make a decision. You got to make a decision. If you don't want to wrestle, you still have other things you can offer to a wrestling federation. I mean, you can manage, you can lead a group of people. There's a lot of things you could do. There's a lot of things you could do. So, in all honesty, she does have something to offer more minor federations, but I don't think she has anything to offer the WWE at this point. So I don't know why she's being kept on. And again, I don't know why you're looking at people being dismissed for, well, they got a big bloated contract. Well, they got a big bloated contract. They don't have a big bloated contract like Brock Lesnar, and he's back. I would make this challenge. Now, I don't know who'd win, but I would make this challenge, and I think that it would be damn close. Who sold the most merchandise, Brock Lesnar or Bray Wyatt? Now, I know Brock Lesnar sold a whole lot of those Suplex City shirts. But I'm here to tell you that Bray Wyatt made that company a ton of money. Now, just the other day, I'm walking in a store, and I checked out the toy section, and there's a brand-new Bray Wyatt figure out. And he's got the pig, Huskus the Pig, with him, and it's Elite Series Bray Wyatt, not the Fiend. It's just Bray Wyatt, the Funhouse Bray Wyatt. And I want you to understand something. Sometimes we dig into the business side of wrestling here, and I know some fans love it and some fans don't, so I'll keep it brief. If you're a toy company and you want to market a Brock Lesnar figure, you got to give the WWE money. You got to license that out, his likeness, for a specific purpose, for making a toy, for making an action figure. And the WWE gets money of that. Well, here's a newsflash. If I was a toy company and I said, I want to make a Bray Wyatt figure, that does not give me the right to make a Fiend figure. You got to pay twice. I would have to do Bray Wyatt, and I would have to do the Fiend. That means they made double licensing money on him. Any Fiend toy is not necessarily covered by the licensing of Bray Wyatt. Interesting, right? So they were making double money that way. Now, I heard that this really wasn't about finance. This was about creative differences coming to a boil, where Bray Wyatt basically said, I'm not going to have my characters destroyed anymore. And there were some problems where he had they had given him some things they wanted him to do, I guess, and he had said, I'm not doing it. So I don't know what the situation really is. I do know it's gotten to this point. They confiscated a fan's very, very articulated Fiend sign at a WWE event and would not give it back. Now, that's very unusual. I understand that he's not working for him anymore. But confiscating the sign, especially when, because here's what you got to understand. If it was a Bray Wyatt sign, okay. They still own the Fiend. They own everything about the Fiend. They own that mask. They own that outfit. They own everything. Tomorrow they can put somebody else in that Fiend outfit and still have the Fiend. I mean, the Fiend never talked. How would you even know who was in the outfit? No, you wouldn't have the Bray Wyatt funhouse guy talking up the Fiend, but you'd have the Fiend. So for them to confiscate that sign is weird because they still own copyright to that and they're still licensing stuff on that. So I found that odd, Mike. I don't necessarily know why the WWE would confiscate that sign.
Right. It'd be like them confiscating a sign of Big Daddy Cool, and after they decide to bring in fake Razor and fake Diesel, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about, which we were talking about earlier. You know, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall had already left, and so WWE wanted at the time, still wanted Diesel and Razor, so they got two other guys, one of them being Kane, of course, two other guys to come in and play those characters, right? So what's stopping them from doing that? You know, for God's sake, they were selling ugly Christmas sweaters of the Fiend.
They were. I got one. Listen, the bottom line situation is this. The WWE is in a really unusual mode right now. And by that, I mean, I don't think they know what direction they want to go because they are constantly contradicting what they said. For instance, they're saying, well, we would like to have bigger guys. We think that's what's missing. Now, we could argue all day long whether that's true or false. Doesn't matter. I'm just saying that's what the WWE said. We think what's missing in our federation is larger-than-life athletes who are really big and tough-looking and, looks like they could tear the head off all the fans in the audience, and that's what we think we're missing. Okay. Well, then if that is truly what you think is missing, why would you let guys go that fit that bill? Why would you ruin Karrion Kross? Why would you let go Bray Wyatt and The Fiend? That doesn't make any sense. You'd be cutting guys like Ali. You'd be cutting guys like Mansoor. You'd be cutting guys like Ricochet. Those are the guys you'd be cutting because you'd say, well, you don't fit that mode. You wouldn't be jobbing out Dominik Dijakovic. You would be running with him because he fits that mode. So even what you say, you don't live up to. This is where the problem comes with WWE. And Samoa Joe has actually did an interview where he kind of alluded to that, but in a nice way. And he said, you know, there are certain things when you sign a WWE contract, they are looking for something very specific. The problem is that something very specific could change next week. So in other words, they may bring you in and say, we're looking for exactly this. And you say, well, that's me. So that's good. That's what I do, and that's what I can do. And a month later, it's, no, now we're looking for exactly this, and you're not any of that. So he said it changes quite often, and it can be a problem when you sign a long-term contract. You sign yourself a 3-year deal, and they're telling you you're exactly what we're looking for, and 2 months down the road, they're saying we're going in a different direction. Then what? And for a while, he said it looked like they were moving in the direction of the younger, smaller, faster, more athletic type wrestling. And then they just hit the brakes on that. So that left guys like Ricochet and Buddy Murphy and some of these other guys stranded. even that doesn't make sense. Because if that's the case, then you would have got rid of a lot of the bigger guys that you're pushing. You wouldn't have to worry about a Brock Lesnar. You wouldn't have a Bobby Lashley as champion. You wouldn't have a Drew McIntyre as champion. You wouldn't have Roman Reigns as champion. So it seems like the WWE, Mike, always hedges their bets. They say they want something, but then they don't prove it by their very actions.
Right. Right. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, you talked about earlier, Marcus, you talked about Dijakovic, but, I mean, you look at his tag team partner as well, formerly
yep.
The Old Man. You know, he's another bigger guy. Hell, you know, he don't look it now because he's with those two big guys, but a guy there, Jinder, he's a bigger guy.
He's big.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, so and if you wanted bigger guys, you wouldn't have fired our guy there, the Monster Among Men.
That's true. See, that's what I'm saying. We want bigger guys who look like they can really tear your head off, but Braun, you're fired. That's why it doesn't make sense, folks. If the WWE has a real problem, and I know a lot of fans say, oh, it's a terrible booking, true enough. Oh, it's that they have horrible storylines, true enough. But their main problem, really, is they're extraordinarily inconsistent. Mike's absolutely right. So if all of us here owned the WWE and we all collectively made a decision, and the decision was we thought we wanted to move in the direction of younger, faster, more athletic wrestlers, but it's not turning out well for us. So we're going to go with the bigger, meaner guys. The last guys we're going to fire is Braun Strowman. The last guy I'm going to fire is Bray Wyatt. The last guys I'm going to job out is Dominik Dijakovic and Dio Madden and Karrion Kross. Those would be my mainstays. I'd be saying to guys like Mansoor and Ali and Ricochet, look, you know, for the remainder of your contract, you guys are basically going to be doing the job because we're moving in a new direction and it's not faster, smaller guys. So, you know, you've kind of outlived your usefulness. So we're going to cycle you guys down, and then we're probably not re-signing you. No, they don't do that. What do? The same day they make an announcement, we're going in the direction of bigger guys, they have Adam Cole come to the WWE offices of Vince McMahon to discuss a long-term contract. Adam Cole, who makes Finn Balor look like Braun Strowman. Makes no sense. Now, I'm not saying that Adam Cole wouldn't be a great pickup, but then stop saying you want bigger guys. Say, no, we're going in. Find the direction you want to go and go there. Because this lack of direction is what's killing the WWE. And it's not helping, by the way, that their networks, both Fox and USA, are in their ear like a bunch of Karens every time something happens. Now, what we heard from USA, and I warned you it was going to happen 2 weeks ago on this show, like Nostradamus, I warned you, when USA executives realize, wait a minute, Fox got Brock Lesnar and Becky Lynch, they're going to be pissed. Well, guess who's pissed? USA Network, who's saying, you know what, the actual F. We'd like some ratings too, please. Why did you do that? So now the WWE's got to answer to them, and they want a big name. They want somebody over there that's going to push that needle. Now, you'd think Fox would be ecstatic, right? You think Fox would say, well, this is going to help. Becky Lynch is back, the return of Brock Lesnar, they're both on our brand, that's gonna help us tremendously. No, Fox is bitching, saying, why didn't you sign CM Punk? Yeah, we just, you know, we saw the big reaction he got and everything, why didn't you sign him? This doesn't help. In the old days, as long as you didn't do something ridiculous, like somebody stripped on television or somebody said the F word, The TV stations basically left you alone. They decided they wanted your product. They let you run it. They oversaw it in the sense that if you did something outrageous that they were going to get sponsor loss from or whatever, they'd come down on you. But they didn't actively sit down and say, let's all of us plan a strategy for how your business is going to go. I don't understand this. You either want wrestling or you don't. They don't do that with anything else. SNY doesn't go to the Mets clubhouse and say, we really think you should sign this guy because it would improve the subscribership of SNY. Well, they don't do that. So why are you doing it for wrestling? See, when the big money comes along, when they're giving you this kind of money, they want a big say. And this is where this slippery slope started, where it's not the fans who create the income for WWE anymore. See, they used to be beholden to you because you were the fans. You were the ones who paid for the tickets, right? You were the ones who bought the T-shirts and bought the pay-per-views and all that kind of stuff. Now they don't care. They can give the tickets away for free, and they often do. They don't care if you show up and pay for a ticket or not. That's if it just slightly dampens their loss of renting the building or whatever, then that's fine with them. They don't need you there. They got their big network money already. They don't even need you to watch the pay-per-views anymore because Peacock bought them out. They got their sweet Peacock money, so they don't care. You watch the pay-per-view, watch it. You don't, what do we care? There's no skin off our nose at this point. We got our money. What has ended up happening to the wrestling business, specifically the WWE, but it's starting to happen with others, is that their income is no longer based upon you. I mean, in a roundabout way it is, because if you stop watching completely, then these networks aren't going to re-sign to this program with a big deal and a big money deal. But right now it's not. WWE signs a deal with Saudi Arabia, that's all the money in the world. They sign a deal with USA, that's a $1 billion deal. They sign a deal with Fox, that's a $1 billion deal. Now they bought out the WWE network for $1 billion to Peacock. And see, this is why the WWE doesn't care who they let go. They're like, oh, get rid of the top-end contracts because we don't need to draw fans necessarily. And this is why these networks are saying, well, what about the ratings? We want better ratings. And the WWE is saying as long as it's above a certain percentage, which is probably about 1.3 or something like that, we're fine. Yeah, you're fine because you already got your money. Watch how quick this would turn around if both USA and Fox said, if you hit under $1 million even once during the course of this deal, we have the right to rescind this entire deal. It's at our discretion. Watch how quick the WWE wouldn't drop some of these people. Watch how quick they would make offers to sign big names. Watch how quick they would put marquee matches up because their livelihood would depend on it. Now, there are some clauses in contracts saying we can move you. I think Fox has one that says we can move you to Fox Sports if it drops consistently below a certain amount. But it's a problem. It's not going to drop consistently below that amount because there are some people who will watch it. It does not make any difference. If it's horrible or if it's great, they're still going to watch it. But you've noticed, Todd, in these past several months, the WWE kind of stopped, almost like they stopped caring to a large extent.
You're silly right there. Well, like you said, they stopped caring way before this, way before when they had the WWE Network, the actual WWE Network, where they got sold to Peacock. They stopped caring the fans back then, too.
Yeah, they're kind of leveling the fans out of it. You know, that's why they feel empowered to go on and say, oh, F the fans, basically. I mean, they don't say it just like that, but that's the impression you get. Yeah, because you're not putting the money in their pockets anymore. Tomorrow, nobody watched WWE on Peacock. What's Peacock going to do? cry about it. They've already given their money. Money's in the bank. So I think this is part of the problem, a large part of the problem. But if the WWE truly wants to rebrand itself and reboot itself, then they have to make some tough decisions. And one of those decisions is, what are we going to be going forward? So let's talk about what maybe they should be. And we know they're doing it with NXT, but they're also saying they're doing it with WWE. Now, I've seen two different NXT logos. One didn't look that bad. One looked like a sign for Woodstock. I have absolutely no idea which one is the right one or if they're both right. But I know the tie-dye one doesn't work for me. Because the last time I checked, these tie-dye type things is a sign of peace. And I don't think wrestling's about peace. It's not supposed to be. War Games, featuring an NXT logo that's a tie-dye sign of peace. Yeah, that works. What genius came up with that? But they're claiming, okay, NXT now is going to move back to a much more of a training ground type thing. We're not demanding that they have high ratings. We have no plans to send them out on the road. So what we're basically going to do is make them a sedentary federation who stays in one spot for the most part and is a training ground for people who could someday main event WrestleMania. That's the talking point. We're looking for guys and women who one day could main event WrestleMania. Okay, well, then you've sent another mixed message. Because in that same breath, insiders are saying the powers that be in NXT have clearly said that Johnny Gargano is going to be the top heel moving forward. Johnny Gargano is not a large man. Yeah, he's a great wrestler, but you just said that's not what you want. And you sure as hell know Johnny Gargano is not main eventing WrestleMania. So again, the total hypocrisy. You say one thing and do another. We want larger guys who the fans are really impressed by and wouldn't want to fight in real life. And then on Friday night, you bring out Finn Balor to challenge Roman Reigns. None of this makes any sense. Okay, you replace Karrion Kross with Samoa Joe. They're both big guys. But then who's Samoa Joe's main challengers? Pete Dunne? I love Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne, I've said on this show, is one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. He's a small dude. And so is everyone else challenging him. It's not true. It doesn't make any sense. Then you may as well have kept Adam Cole down there. If Johnny Gargano is going to be your main heel, how come Adam Cole can't be one of your main faces or flip face or stay a heel and be one of your main heels? Who cares? Size down there. See, this is the thing. If you're WWE higher up, wouldn't it make more sense to have one federation where it's not that important? Like, you could say, look, Raw and SmackDown, they're going to have to be bigger guys. In NXT, no, they don't have to be bigger guys. That'll be a different style of wrestling. That way we got everything covered. That's what you would have done if you're going to keep NXT an actual brand. And that would make sense. If you're going to make it a training ground, then no, because you don't want those guys. Like I said, Johnny Gargano's not going to be main eventing WrestleMania. Johnny Gargano's not coming up to make a big splash on the main roster, especially if you just said you want bigger, larger-than-life guys. He doesn't fit that criterion. So I'm not sure, Mike, what they actually do want. I'm not 100% sure they know what they want.
Right, and think about it. Man, there's a whole list of bigger guys that they've cut loose. Not just Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman and the late Luke Harper and his former partner, but Nikki Cross's husband was a bigger guy. Alexander Wolf was a bigger guy. I mean, there's a whole – if you wanted bigger guys, then you should have kept those other guys. You know, you had a number of bigger guys on your roster, and you let most of them go. And you're jobbing the rest of them out.
Yeah, that's what's frustrating, Mike. If no matter what their decision was, I'd have lived with it. If the WWE said, look, the era of the big steroid monster guy is out. So, unfortunately, I mean, we may keep one or two guys. We're going to keep some of our top guys. We're not going to throw Roman Reigns under the bus, and we're not going to, you know, maybe we won't throw Drew McIntyre under the bus. But guys like Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman and those big guys who are slow and awkward, when they're done. I would have said, all right, well, I think it's a mistake. But, okay, at least we know what direction you're going in. At least we know where your future lies. Likewise, if you say, well, we're going with the bigger guys. But when you say something and do the exact opposite, then fans are just left with, well, how come this guy and not this guy? How come this guy and not this guy? You're absolutely right. You've just named a whole bunch of people who could have fit in very well into this larger guy thing. Alexander Wolf was certainly one of them. You never would have let Braun Strowman go. Rusev. There's a ton of them. And you would be obviously not pushing guys like Mansoor and Ali and Ricochet and those type of guys. So I don't know where this is going. I really don't. I'm interested to see what NXT does. Now, they have Samoa Joe, who's, I think, about 42. And he's a big guy. They have him as champion. But they're getting rid of Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross is not going to be basically main roster. So you've lost the big guy down there. So you obviously think Karrion Kross is some guy who potentially could someday main event WrestleMania, and yet you're jobbing him out to Jeff Hardy, who's a smaller guy, not very small. See, Jeff Hardy's one of those guys that just maybe just about the lower size you want if you're going with big guys. A lot of people don't know, but Jeff Hardy is, I think he's like 6'1", maybe even 6'2". And he's 220, you know, probably right around there. He's a little bigger than he looks. So he'd be okay. A guy like AJ Styles would be okay. But when you start to get to the really small guys, that's when you have to shake your head and say, well, no, that you said you didn't want that. So in the coming weeks, we'll see what they do with NXT. But I think NXT has left fans a little bit confused, and some fans are very angry. Because some fans feel like, well, we're going to lose that style that made NXT special to begin with, which was a faster-paced, harder-fought, longer-match-type style. And they're probably right. Because I'm not seeing Samoa Joe and a guy Samoa Joe's size. We saw what happened with Karrion Kross and Samoa Joe. Was it a good match? It was a good match. Was it a typical NXT-style match? Absolutely not. Because the one thing that's missing when you don't have a more cardiovascularly set guy is you don't have a guy to create the motion. So there's going to be more rest holds. There's going to be a slower pace. If you are going to go 20 minutes, there's going to be a lot of times when it's on the ground and just, you know, in a hold. There's no one there to set that. When Karrion Kross did that four-way dance with Adam Cole and I think it was Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor, all those guys were creating motion. So Karrion Kross was protected. He didn't have to create a lot of motion. He could do 25 minutes because what was he doing? Nobody was running him. But when it's one-on-one, that's different. I don't know, Todd. I mean, as an NXT watcher, would you rather see them go the route of being a training ground for future WWE superstars and go with the larger people? Or would you rather them keep themselves a separate federation and just go with a different style of wrestling than the WWE normally does?
I like to keep them like separate, like a different brand from like Raw and SmackDown, WWE. as their own, they're doing their own shows and everything.
See, I think a lot of people feel that way. I think a lot of the NXT fans feel that way. I think initially people flocked to NXT to see the new, who would be the new stars of WWE, much like you do in a minor league baseball game. But after a while, I think the fans were kind of led to believe, don't worry about that. We're a separate federation. We're giving you a different style of wrestling. We're offering you something different, maybe for the more mature wrestling fan or the more, what's the right word for it? I don't want to say hardcore because then you think of blood and barbed wire. I don't mean that kind of hardcore. But the more steadfast fan. And WWE, SmackDown, and Raw will be for the 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and the light fans and the people who aren't really into 20-minute matches because they get bored and things like that. But the really, you know, steadfast wrestling fan, you'll get your indie feel. You'll get that out of NXT. And then they got used to it. And they said, well, this is great because we're not a big WWE fan. And their style of wrestling, which is often slow and short, and at very slow paced and somewhat short matches, we're fans of this indie style of wrestling, which NXT is bringing us, which is WWE, but we like this. So you had the market cornered. The truth of the matter is, I think that WWE thinks AEW took that audience. When AEW started winning every week in the ratings to NXT, I think Vince McMahon said, they've got the market cornered on this indie-style feel, and there's no point of us competing with them on that front anymore. And I think, Mike, that's what's bringing about this change.
I think so, too. And the problem is you look – but, again, you look at AEW, and you look – they have just about everything, right? Rusev's there.
Yeah,
he's a bigger guy. They can do – just about every type of match you want to do, even the more hardcore stuff, which is basically right now Moxley's deal. And WWE just isn't doing that right now. So it's not just the type of wrestlers that the AEW has that's making them better. It's the fact that they're willing to take a chance on showing us what wrestling can be, you know, in terms of the type of matches, the number of matches. Yeah, they may have a lot. They may have too many people on the roster now. I get that, all right. But in terms of the type of wrestling they're putting on, you once said you wanted to see all types of wrestling on any given show, you know,
yep.
Hardcore, tag team, women's. All this type of wrestling, and you look at what AEW is doing, and it's not what WWE is doing.
You see, what I do is even more severe than what AEW is doing, and this is why I think WWE is short-sighted. I would mix in all of those styles of wrestling. I just wouldn't mix them in with each other. There's no reason for me to see Ricochet go against Bobby Lashley. That's dumb. But why can't I see Ricochet go against Ali? Why can't I see Ricochet go against Mansoor? Why can't I see Ricochet go against like a Sami Zayn or a Jeff Hardy or somebody like that? You take those guys in that division and you say this belt, whichever belt it is, whether it's the 24/7 belt or whether it's the Intercontinental or the U.S., but whatever belt it is, and you say this is kind of your division. Yeah, once in a while you guys will fight the bigger guys, but for the most part, you guys are going to stay in your own lane. We're not going to have a Ricochet against, you know, Karrion Kross. There's no point. And we'd get to see the best of both worlds. We'd get to see a Keith Lee against, you know, Karrion Kross. We'd get to see Ricochet against Jeff Hardy. We'd get to see those things. And we wouldn't have to worry that, well, one side is being treated as enhancement and the other side isn't. No. Let's have all of it. How come we can't have that? See, that's the problem. The WWE is short-sighted, and they say there can only be one style of wrestling on our show. Do we want to go with the younger, faster guys and the more athletic guys, or do we want to go with the big, giant guys who scare fans? How come we can't do both? Well, we can't do both because it looks stupid for Ricochet to go in there against Bobby Lashley and almost beat him. Right, so don't put him against Bobby Lashley. Put him against guys his own size. Well, we tried that with 205 Live. No, you didn't really. And I'll tell you why you didn't. You made it its own program. You put a whole bunch of people on there who really didn't have a ton of charisma once you lost Neville and once you lost Enzo. And there wasn't a ton of people on there to draw for you. But you've already got the 2 million people watching. So put a Ricochet against Jeff Hardy. I personally would love to see that match. Why can't we have that? And it also gives your smaller guys something to do, and it alleviates your bigger guys having to worry about getting ran to death and do 20-minute matches. You know who used to do this like a boss? WCW. We had a running joke when WCW used to do pay-per-views, and me and my friends would buy it, and we'd go for pizza or Chinese or whatever we were going to chow down on for the pay-per-view, and we'd say, we got to get back before the opening matches, because those are going to be the really, really, really good wrestling matches. Now, the ones at the end, they're not going to be good wrestling matches, but they're going to be important matches. So, in other words, it's not so important who won between Flying Brian Pillman and Eddie Guerrero, but boy, is that going to be a great match. So we want to see that match. But later on, Hulk Hogan's going to take on whoever, and we want to see that because that's important to the storyline. So WCW had two things going for a while. They had the good matches, the really good hard-fought matches up front, and they'd usually put them the first three or four matches. And then as the card got on, the more main event matches were the bigger guys, the slower guys, but the guys that were drawing and the guys that had huge storylines. They did that very well for a short period of time. And then they started to change into, well, we only want to do one method. So truthfully, I think there's a glut in the market for this. Now, Tony Khan's trying to fill that glut to a certain extent, but I don't think he's doing a great job. As a matter of fact, I think this overbooking or people and over signing people from AEW is going to bite him in the ass. And I think this WWF or WWE, I should say, WWE franchise of we're going to rebuild, I think that's going to bite him in the ass. And while each guy's biting themselves in the ass, I'm hoping that Impact actually can capitalize on this. Because what I'm about to say is probably going to surprise you. But out of all of these federations, the one who has changed the least and steadfastly sort of held on to what pro wrestling is kind of supposed to be is Impact. Now, they don't have a lot of guys who are super draws. That's a problem. Granted. And they don't have the best production, and they don't have the best television network. And, you know, they're forced to go a little weird sometimes and do things. It's like, you jumped the shark. But overall, those are the guys who have held more steadfastly onto what wrestling is really supposed to be. And recently, Braun Strowman made a tweet that said, if you're going to make an impact, then you have to be willing to change. And hashtag Titan. That sounds like a hint he's going to Impact. And from what I'm hearing, Bray Wyatt is very likely to end up in Impact Wrestling because they're giving him the most creative freedom. Now, I don't know why Tony Khan wouldn't give him all the creative freedom in the world. But from what I'm hearing, he's more likely to end up on Impact. If that's the case, Mike, this could be a very interesting fall for Impact Wrestling.
Oh, it could be, and particularly, I don't know what their contract is with their current network. If they're getting these guys like this to go there, and they come back, they start to get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, and the ratings go up. they may very well be able to go and get on to a bigger network at some point. And that's, I think that's kind of what's holding the Impact back, because I don't have that network, you know. I don't
right.
have it. So I can't really watch Impact, even though Bray and Braun are going to be there, or probably going to be there, maybe. You know, whereas I don't know. I don't know if they still have a working relationship with AEW, does Impact, but I would love if they did at some point, if Impact ratings goes up on the current network, that and the contract comes up, that somewhere along the line, maybe TBS or TNT picks up Impact, you know?
Well, I think they have an actual working relationship right now, but I don't think they left it on bad terms. In other words, I don't think they said, okay, you screwed up, we don't want to work with you. I think they just universally said, okay, we did our shtick together. Maybe we'll do something together again. But for now, we're not. So, yeah, I mean, that could happen. But I know I'm getting a lot of questions about, well, what do you mean the WWE doesn't get? Why would the TV networks be upset? Let me try to explain it in a more simple form. Let's say I have a candy bar, and it's really delicious. And I put it out on the market. It's doing real well. And it becomes a very big deal. And a company like, let's say, Nestle says, we want to buy your candy bar. You keep making it, though, but we'll put the brand on it, okay? And I say, okay, and they give me a whole bunch of money. And then I change the ingredients. I use cheaper ingredients. The candy bar doesn't taste the same. Nestle's going to say, what the actual F did you do? The minute you got your money and you don't care anymore about how it tastes, you screwed us over and you started using cheaper ingredients. And that ain't fair. Well, that's what the WWE's done. That's exactly what the WWE's done. Once they got their big deals, once they got their big Peacock deal, they got their big USA deal, they got their big Fox deal, they said, we don't need these big contracts. We don't need a Bray Wyatt. We don't need a Braun Strowman. We don't need Rusev. Before, they would have said, well, we do need them. We can't afford to lose them. But now it's not no skin off their nose anymore. That's the problem. Why do I want to put the top ingredients in my candy bar once Nestle has bought it and I got all my money? I'm only responsible for the manufacturing of it now, so what the fuck do I care? That's why the networks are mad, because they're looking at WWE saying, once you got your money, the quality of your product went down considerably. And it seems like you did it on purpose to save yourself money so you'd get even more money. Just like my candy bar analogy. So, Todd, that's why I think the TV stations are mad. They're looking at this saying, you've lowered the quality of the product.
Like, oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that's why the Fox and USA networks are not too happy with the WWE because they want the ratings and everything.
Now, as far as signing CM Punk for whichever it is, Fox, to say, oh, you should have signed him, that's none of their business. They don't have to deal with him backstage. They don't have to deal with the demands. They don't have to deal with the nonsense and the isolating of the dressing room and all that kind of stuff. They don't have to deal with that. So that's really none of their business. What is their business, though, is to make sure that that product still stays, you know, up to quality. Because they've got a huge investment in it. How do you tell your advertisers, it's this much money to advertise a 30-second commercial during SmackDown because we get 2.7 million people, viewers, right in your age demographic that you're looking to sell your product to. And they say, oh, okay, well, we'll spend all that money then. That sounds worth it. And then when the ratings come out, you did 1.8. And they're like, hey, wait a minute. You shorted me a million viewers that you guaranteed me were in my demographic, and they're not in my demographic. I'm not advertising with you anymore. You lied to me. That's where the problem lies. So WWE's only obligation, unfortunately, right now, isn't to make fans happy. It's to make their networks happy. So that when their contract comes due again, they say, yes, we're going to up the contract for another 3 years for another $1 billion or however much it's going to be. And that's how the WWE makes money. It's just as simple as that. There's a lot of people out there that still think, well, I support the WWE. I bought their action. I bought an action figure. Okay, well, here's the thing. You inadvertently have supported WWE, but not to a large extent. WWE already got that money from the licensing company, from Jax or whoever made it. Whether they sell one Bray Wyatt figure or 1 million is irrelevant to the WWE only because they've already got their money. It may be relevant when it relies to, well, how much money will they spend for the licensing next time? But as far as this time, they got their money. You got paid up front. You know the old saying, pay somebody half and half when they're done with the job, otherwise they'll do a lousy job if they got paid up front? Well, the WWE is getting paid up front all the time now. All the time. And you see the result. Bad writing, horrible booking, lackluster matchups, storylines that go nowhere, angles that go nowhere. Finn Balor literally came out and said, don't worry, I haven't forgot about John Cena. I'll deal with him. When are you going to deal with him? And here's a big, giant, glaring news flash for Finn Balor. If you think for 1 minute that John Cena is coming back to lose to you, you are very sadly mistaken. John Cena might have came back to lose to Roman Reigns and passed the torch. He ain't losing to Finn Balor. And nobody wants to see the match, by the way. So I don't really care what Finn Balor has to say. See, that's where the problem is. Oh, we dropped a hint. It's going to be Finn Balor against John Cena. Oh, so what? I don't care. And that's a problem. But when we see lines written, and we're going to start getting into our SmackDown review a little bit here. When we see lines written that's so bad that Naomi shows up on SmackDown and is literally told by Sonya Deville, I didn't even know you were coming here. And I don't know if you measure up. She's a two-time SmackDown champion. What do you mean she doesn't measure up? That doesn't make any sense at all. That doesn't make any sense at all. Zelina Vega is there. And you were so happy. I'm so happy to welcome her back. She's going to be a big addition. But Naomi's not. Now, I know why you did it. You did it because you want to say she's being mistreated by the powers that be so that she can go into Roman Reigns' stable, and that's fine. The idea is correct. She needs to go into the Roman Reigns camp. Got it. This isn't the way to do it. The way to do it is to have Sonya Deville say, oh, I'm so glad you're here. You know, you're going to be a big addition to this place, and I can't wait to get you right out there. You got a match tonight. And Naomi could say, well, I mean, tonight, I was sort of hoping next week. I just got off the plane, and I've just, oh, no, go right out there tonight, and I'll get you an opponent. I'll find you an opponent. And have it be somebody ridiculously impossible that you could beat without, you know, one of your top people. And Naomi will lose. And then Sonya Deville could rightfully say, well, I don't know, I've given you a couple of matches, and you haven't exactly lit it up. You don't look like the Naomi of old. And she could say, well, look what you've done to me. You throw me in last minute all the time. You never even give me a hint of who I'm going to wrestle. You don't plan it ahead of time, a week or anything, and then you throw me in against these top people expecting I'm ready for it. That's hardly fair. Then, when Roman Reigns says you're being treated unfairly, they're doing that to you on purpose. Because they know there's a connection here, and this is their way to get back. It makes sense. It makes sense. And you say, yeah, that's right. Sonya Deville has done that. Oh, the last-minute substitution. Naomi, go out there and fight so-and-so. What? I don't even hardly have my stuff here. You told me I wasn't doing anything tonight. Well, you are now. That's the way to do it. But to have her with a straight face saying, oh, well, I didn't even know you were coming to SmackDown, well, that's ridiculous. That couldn't be true. And number two, to say, I don't know if you measure up, well, that is absolutely, you never downgrade the people that you have on your show. Even if it's a storyline, Sonya Deville's reaction should have been like, this is going to be great. I'm so happy to have you here. You're a two-time SmackDown Women's Champion. You're going to shake this division to the core. I know you're going to make a big impact. And then treat her poorly. Give her last-minute matches and say, oh, that's right, I forgot you were on the roster, but just you go out and face this person. I'm not even warmed up. Well, I know I said you weren't wrestling, but you have to. We ain't got anybody else. You have to go. Then when she doesn't win, say, well, I don't, you're not doing too well. That way when Roman Reigns comes along and says, well, you know, under these circumstances, who's going to do well? They did that to you on purpose. They're trying to make a fool out of you. That works. This doesn't work, Mike. You can't tell a two-time SmackDown Women's Champion, I don't know if you measure up to a roster that has Zelina Vega on it.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. And think about this. Your recipe analogy for a wrestling show is very apt. There is a recipe you have to do to have a good wrestling show. I give you an example. I give you another example of what you were talking about. Back in the early to mid 80s, whatever it was, the Coke had been around for years and had been making money hand over fist, right? Just selling their Cokes. Well, what they do,
yep.
They go back and they change the recipe. It ended up being one of the worst decisions they ever made, and that new recipe didn't sell, didn't taste good, and whatever, didn't sell. So what they do, they said they went back to the old recipe and they called it New Coke. But they went back to the old recipe, and they've been there ever since, right? So
yeah.
So they, unlike the WWE, Coca-Cola made a decision. It was a poor decision, but it was a decision. They changed it. Then they made another decision, which was a pretty good decision, and they changed it back, and we see how that's gone. I mean, like I said, there's a recipe for these wrestling shows that you should be following.
That's the thing. It's a very simple recipe. Find people that have personalities that fans care about. Put them in situations that the people they care about are in peril. The people they really hate are the ones behind it. Sit back and watch the fun. It is the easiest recipe in the world. It is not rocket science. I get so tired of these indie promoters and these writers and even wrestlers telling me, you know, it's a very complex thing, Marcus, to write. No. No, it is not. I understand you can't please everyone. No one can please everyone. Okay? No one can please everyone. There are people out there who say, hey, you know what? The Beatles suck. Okay? You can't please everyone. But you can please the majority of your fans. And that's your job. And it's a very simple recipe. Find the people they care about. Well, they cared about Bray Wyatt. You let him go. They cared about Rusev. You let him go. What in the actual hell makes you think that's best for business? You can't let go of the people that the fans actually have an attachment to. You've got to let go of the people that they don't have any attachment to because they're not connecting with your audience. I don't care if they're good wrestlers. It doesn't matter if they're good wrestlers. It's inconsequential if they're a good athlete, if they're not connecting with that audience. If nobody cares whether they win or lose, why the hell should we care to watch the match? What's the point? So you got to get rid of the guys that you say, well, we can't seem to find a way to get the fans to care about them one way or the other. Now, let me caution about something, too, though. The WWE's biggest successes have come when they didn't automatically dismiss someone who wasn't connecting with the audience. The Rock was not connecting with the audience when he first came out as Rocky Maivia. People were chanting Rocky sucks, and they meant it. It wasn't heat because he was a face. They didn't like him. The WWE reinvented him, and look what you got. Remember the Ringmaster? How'd that work out for Stone Cold Steve Austin, huh? That worked out like powdered shit. They reinvented him into Stone Cold Steve Austin, and look what you got. New Day. Remember when they came out and they were like, they were going to be a little bit like the Nation of Domination at first. Then they said, we don't like that, so we're going to have you come out as like these Baptist Holy Rollers. Nobody liked that. And they were about to cut them loose. When I think it was Xavier Woods said, can we just try to be ourselves and see if we can add something to this? And Vince said, go ahead and look what they got. So you don't automatically give up on people. See, that's the new format for WWE, and that's got to change too. When you hire someone, my presumption is you hired them because you think they're good. You think they have what it takes to be a WWE superstar, and you think they have what it takes to be one of the top people. Otherwise, why hire them? When it seems like they're not going in that direction, instead of you saying, we were wrong, that guy sucks, the writer's got nothing for you, no, you have to go to the writers and say, we were wrong, this character's not working, come up with something that will, based upon the style he wrestles and his personality or her personality, their look, everything. Come up with something that's going to work. That's your job. Instead, the WWE just says, that didn't work. Next, we got another guy. Get rid of him. Send him down. Whatever you're going to do. We don't need him. Why? If you had done that with Stone Cold, you never would have had him, right? If you'd done that with The Rock, you never would have had him. You've done that with a New Day, you never would have had him. You have to stop that. You have to stop that. You legitimately have to tell your writers, the people we hire are the people we intend to use. It's your job to get them over. Yes, they have to get themselves over to an extent with what you're giving them, but it's your job to make sure what you're giving them they can do. In other words, let's say I stumbled onto the scene and I said, I have this great idea for a character. His name is going to be Stone Cold, and he's going to be this beer-drinking, redneck, wild guy, and I think that Sami Zayn would suit that character. No, it's not going to work. And if you're a writer and you think it is, then you're an idiot. You have to take a look at the guy and say, what is it about this guy or woman that I can promote? What is the selling point of this person? That's what you have to do. And they're not doing it. Instead, they're just discarding you like yesterday's garbage. Well, we had an idea, but you didn't do it well. So therefore, you're done. No, it should be, therefore, the writer is done. Because you screwed up. You said he was good for that idea. Is it Sami Zayn's fault if I come up with a Stone Cold character for him and he sucks at it? Or is it my fault because I should have been able to look at Sami Zayn and say, well, he can't play this kind of character. That's not his style. It's not his style on the mic. It's not his look. It's not his attitude. And there's nothing about him that screams this. He can't do it. Is it my fault or is it Sami Zayn's fault? I'll tell you whose fault it is. It's my fault. You have to be able to judge your talent and what it is they can do the best and how they can connect with that audience. And we have writers that won't do it or can't do it. I'm not sure which. But, Todd, I think history has proven that if they just threw away some of these guys, they wouldn't have had some of their biggest stars.
You're absolutely right there, like you said, about what would these WWE superstars back then, like you said, when The Rock came in as Rocky Maivia, he didn't get over as that. They rebranded him repackaged him into The Rock. They made tons of money off of that. With the Ringmaster, same thing.
Money. Now, Derek's saying, well, they're going to repackage Elias. Could you make him a special character? I got news for you, Derek. I'm glad you brought this up. I don't know what they're going to do with Elias, but I know this. You should never have had to repackage him because what you had with him worked. That would be like saying, hey, Stone Cold's taken off. Let's repackage him and say Stone Cold's dead. And he's going to end up being a trolley car driver who comes out with a small trolley car. Well, then you've killed it. I don't know why you did it. The whole audience was chanting Walk with Elias. The whole audience was buying his albums. The whole audience was cheering along with him when he was making up songs. What was broken? I'll tell you what happened. You hired Rick Boons. He comes in and plays a little bit of guitar, can't sing. And they say, well, we can't have two guitar players. Well, yeah, well, guess what? Then he should have been the guy with a different gimmick. Because Elias had a lot more going for him with that. The moment that audience started chanting Walk with Elias, if you're a good writer and you're a good company man, you say, oh, you better run with this guy. This audience is all about him. And I don't care whether he's a good wrestler or not. We can push him if we do it right. But you know how you do it right is you got to put him up against guys that the fans hate. Someone that you say, oh, my God, if he makes up a song about that guy's going to come try to kill him. But it still would be funny because nobody's ever told him to his face. You know, nobody's ever told him off like that. And then that's Elias's way of getting over with the fans. Elias's charm was, I know what the fans are thinking and they'd like to say, but they can't because they don't have a voice, but I do, and I can put it in a song. You know what I mean? So if he was to drop little pipe bombs in his songs, that is really sort of like what the fans were thinking or the fans' voice, oh, my God, would you have had it. He'd have been the troubadour of the people, right? Isn't that what CM Punk said? I'm the voice of the voiceless. Well, that's what Elias would have been. Because every little song he made up that was like fans saying, yep, that's exactly right. That's what I was thinking. He'd have got more and more and more popular. Instead, you tore him apart. You ruined it. You destroyed it. And now you're going to try to recreate it into something which, to your credit, at least you're not throwing him in the waste paper basket. I get it. But he wasn't broken to begin with. So you can't really compare it because The Rock was broken to begin with. When he came out with that stupid-looking outfit and that pineapple hairdo as Rocky Maivia, that was garbage. That was garbage. That was never going over. So you reinvented him out of necessity. When Stone Cold came out with the Ringmaster, that was never going over. So you reinvented him out of necessity. When the New Day came out as a Nation of Domination, that was never going over because their personalities just wouldn't let it. So you reinvented it out of necessity. You didn't have to reinvent Elias. He was over. It's you who destroyed it. So I don't know where they're going to go with Elias, Mike, but they shouldn't have had to reinvent him at all.
They really shouldn't. And think about this. Rick Boogs, or whatever, should thank Shinsuke Nakamura for helping to get him over, because that's basically what happens. He's got over with the help of Shinsuke Nakamura. And look, I got another one for you. What did they do when Kane first came in? What was he? He was Dr. Isaac Yankum. Yes. Well, he after they had the whatever that it was, that Kiss My Foot match with the King, and he lost, and he had to get his teeth fixed and all that stuff. That was an end story thing. But what happened? He left for 6, 8, 10 months. He came back, and what was it? He became the Undertaker's brother, and now you look at what happened with that Dennis gimmick, and who's doing it, and who's doing it really well right now.
Right, Britt Baker. Yeah, you see, this is what I'm saying. You have to – it's not necessarily the gimmick that sucks. I got news. I'll one-up you. Sid Vicious was supposed to be the Undertaker. Now, I'm here to tell you that that would not have worked. He's a big guy. He looks mean. He certainly looks like he'd tear your head off and all that stuff. But the way Mark Calloway played that character, there's no way Sid's pulling that off. There's just no way. Plus, people wouldn't have bought it because they'd have said, I know who that is. That's Sid Vicious. A lot of people really didn't know who Mark Calloway was. So it was a new guy, and they were like, I don't know who this guy is. If you gave that character to someone and said, I have an idea for a character. He's technically going to be called the Undertaker, and he's sort of like a dead man, and he's almost impervious to pain. And when you do knock him down, if his manager, who's going to be called Paul Bearer, holds up an urn, he's going to pop right back up from the dead. I'd say, oh, this isn't going to work. It might work for like a month or two, and then people are just going to laugh at it. Look how much it worked. Thanks to giving it to the exact right guy. It's like scripting a movie. If you say, well, we're going to have this movie where this guy's a cage fighter, and he's, you know, a brutal cage fighter who is tough as he possibly can be, and the CIA recruits him to go into a special mission where he's got to fight all these people. Okay, well, that sounds good. Now, I'm telling you right now that if you sign, you know, Jack Black to be the cage fighter, it ain't going to work. Not because he's not a good actor, because he doesn't fit it. You could get a guy who's not even a tenth as good of an actor as someone, and it will work because it fits them, and you believe it. Simple as that. And that's wrestling. You have to find the right character for the right person. I don't know what they're intending to do with Elias. I have heard rumors his character is going to be a bit darker. I think that's a mistake. And I'll tell you why it's a mistake. Elias's charm comes from his sense of humor. He has the ability to kind of really make the fans laugh or whatever. And if you draw that away from him, I think it could be a mistake. Now, I can name you a character it worked for, and that's Raven. Scott Levy's characters were always like comedy characters, and he did go on to great success with Raven. But Elias is not Scott Levy. And I don't think he's going to be able to pull it off if you try to make him a darker type of a character. I really don't. And here's another thing about Elias. He is character necessary. In other words, if you just said, here's a guy and his name is Jack, and he looks exactly like Elias and he wrestles exactly like Elias, he's going to be boring. Because Elias's wrestling style is not exciting. Elias is not a great in-ring competitor. He has to be a guy whose personality sells him. So it better be something really, really good. Because his whole personality has to sell him. He's like Enzo. Enzo's personality sold him. He didn't have to be a great wrestler. All he had to do was be Enzo. And that sold him. Some guys aren't necessarily character-driven. You can give Seth Rollins basically any character, and you know his style of wrestling is going to work. It'll work out. He'll still put on good matches, and fans will still care to some extent. That's not true with Elias. He's going to have a character that the audience really connects with. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they're going to do. Do I think it's going to be something great? No, I think it's going to be hogwash. I think they're going to ruin him again. And then they're going to say, well, we tried with him. No, you didn't, because you had the people yelling and screaming for him, and you blew it. That's your fault. You had the whole audience chanting, he's got the whole world in his hands for Bray Wyatt, and you blew it. That's your fault. You had the whole audience singing along with Rusev Day, and you blew it. That's not the fault of any of these guys. You had the right character and the right gimmick for the right guy, and you destroyed it, and I don't know why you did. I honestly don't know why you did. And that's why I said Aleister Black. It's going to be shaky whether he can get over. Now, in AEW, maybe he can do it. But in a place like WWE, that type of character, he's not suited for because he's not big enough. He doesn't look like a guy who you'd be frightened of if you're Bobby Lashley, because you're four times his size. So he can come out with all the dark, eerie, I'm evil type thing in the world, and you're like, yeah, you're also 5'8", and I'm a monster. You can't make the Undertaker a middleweight. You understand? So that's where the problem lies. I don't think Aleister Black had the character for WWE. That's why he didn't get over. In NXT, it was okay because most of the guys were that size. Maybe it'll be okay in AEW because there's not a lot of guys who are super big. But in WWE, it didn't work. Sometimes WWE characters that work in main roster don't work in NXT, and or work in NXT don't work in the main roster. Bo Dallas is a perfect example. Bo Dallas, that Bo Leave gimmick was over like you can't believe in NXT. Fans were buying into that. Everybody had a Bo Leave t-shirt. They were chanting. They were putting the Bo before everything. He got to the main roster and tried that, and people were like, what's this idiot doing? It didn't work at all. Not at all. And instead of the WWE saying, uh-oh, well, that didn't work, so let's kill that right now and come up with something good, they just said, okay, send him to Palookaville where he does nothing. And you wasted a good wrestler doing it. Instead of coming up with something, you know, it might help to sit down and talk to the wrestlers and say, well, what do you think? How do you envision your character? What do you think it can do? You know, when we had a wrestling federation, it used to crack me up because we'd have guys come in that wanted to train, and they were, you know, 5'8", 200 pounds, looked like an Oompa Loompa. Well, I envision myself as like this badass, hardcore street fighter, and I'm like, well, but you're not. So you can't play that character because you don't look anything like that at all. So no one is going to buy you as that. I know that that's a great primo gimmick for a wrestler, but you don't look like that. So unfortunately, you can't be that. And the idea behind it is find the gimmick or the way that that person and their personality can get over with the crowd. WWE just doesn't do it. What's Zelina Vega's personality exactly? That she's mean? So what? I guess all the bad guys are supposed to be mean, right? What's Carmella's personality? I'm conceited. So what? That's not enough. You got to flesh that crap out. Why is Zelina Vega mean? Why is Carmella conceited? Flesh this stuff out. Because if you don't, we're not just going to accept that. That's like there's somebody coming out and you're like, okay, here's Joe Smith, and he's got a buzz cut and black tights on. And, he has a mean face, and he says, oh, I'm in the city of Dallas. Dallas sucks. And everybody says, boo, yeah, I'm the bad guy. Well, how long do you think that's going to get you over? Before people say, oh, that's his shtick. He says that about every town. There's nothing special about him. No. You have to be able to convince people, well, this is why this guy's like this. This is why I don't like this guy. And even when guys come up with stuff. Now, I wasn't a big fan of Sami Zayn and this ridiculous I'm being held down by the man routine and I'm being discriminated against routine and film people there and everything. But where did that lead? Where did that go? All of a sudden, that's gone now. He doesn't think it anymore. He's not mentioning it anymore. You just let it die without giving us any conclusion, Mike. So, again, it's just why do fans buy into things if you're not going to complete them?
Right. Think of it this way, Marcus. When Carmella first showed up, what was she? You know? Princess of Staten Island, this. And you basically said, you're from there. You basically said you've known girls like that, right?
Yep.
You've known girls like that. And we know, and basically, she had a personality, and she had a personality that I guess people could relate to. And we saw where that was going. And, of course, they screwed that up royally by kowtowing to the – You can't have a man pulling down the women's money in the bank or whatever, but that wasn't the WWE's fault though. The WWE was kowtowing to, I mean it partially was, but it's not their fault because they were kowtowing to the people, to these kind of woke people that, oh, you can't have a man doing that, even though that was well within Carmella's character to use James Ellsworth to get her what she wanted.
Absolutely. See, this is the thing. When I said I knew girls like that, what I mean is her character was believable. I've known girls in my time that said, look, I'm pretty. I know I'm pretty. I can get things from guys. I can make them do things they normally wouldn't do. I can turn them on their friends. I can make them do whatever I want to do because I'm who I am. And they get full of themselves. That was supposed to be Carmella. Well, why didn't you flesh that out? Why didn't you have her turn friends on friends? Why didn't you have her have guys do her bidding? That's the whole point of Carmella. That was the whole point. Oh, we really can't do that because it would be like this is a woman exploiting men, and we can't have that. It's supposed to be men exploit women because men are evil and women are virtuous. Well, I don't know what to tell you then. Then if you're going to bow down to the woke culture, then you can't have wrestling because, unfortunately, you're going to have some bad guys, and they have to do bad things, and they have to be bad representations for. It's okay if a man does something bad, though, because, well, it's a typical man for you. But if a woman does something bad, that's horrible. You can't show that because that means you're misogynistic. That's stupid. And that's got to go, too. This whole woke nonsense has to go or wrestling's going to die. So here's what I want to know. Who is Zelina Vega? Why is she doing what she's doing? Why does she act the way she does? What is her motivations? Let's dig into it. She's not a Carmella. Even though she's very pretty and everything, she's not a Carmella. She's not someone who says, I'm using my looks to get my way. She's not that character. She's someone who seems like she feels entitled, but not because she thinks she's beautiful or that she's always been told her whole life she's a princess. So let's dig into her character. Let's dig into Carmella's character more. How come Carmella can't have some guys doing her bidding for him? Dig into that character. Dig into all these characters. Let's give some meat on the bone. So they're not just, here comes Carmella and her gimmick is she thinks she's better than everybody else. But nobody buys it because you don't show that. You know, the easiest thing to do in the world is these little small things that make the audience feel a certain way about a character. You did that with Otis. When you gave Otis certain things to do, people started to feel that Otis was a very likable guy. And you started to like him more and more and more, and you started to feel his pain when he was in love with a girl who's clearly beyond his capacity. And then you start to feel, well, Mandy Rose isn't so shallow, is she? She sees beyond the looks and everything, and obviously Dolph Ziggler would be much more of what most women would consider a trophy boyfriend, but she doesn't care because she sees through all that crap and she likes Otis. You were fleshing those characters out. That's why it worked. It worked because whether you agreed with it or disagreed with it, you understood them as more than just what they do in the ring. That's a good thing. So how did that woman who was writing for that angle get rewarded? They fired her. Now, I think they might have rehired her. I am 100% sure. But at the time, they fired her. One of the best angles you had. You took two people who nobody cared about. Heavy Machinery was going nowhere. And Mandy Rose was going nowhere. And you made them a central focus of SmackDown for a long time. Now you're trying to reinvent Otis, who you never should have had to reinvent to begin with. And the truth of the matter is, if you're a good writer, the way you'd have done this with Otis is he would have been doing everything he's doing now, but he wouldn't have been doing it with a smile on his face. He would have looked regretful every single moment. It would be Chad Gable who had the smile on his face. And Chad Gable saying, this is the way the Alpha Academy does things, and now you're learning to be successful, Otis, and blah, blah, blah. Because the payoff of that would be Otis eventually saying, if this is what I have to do to be successful, I'd rather fail. I threw away all my morals. I threw away my friends. I threw away my fans. I threw away everything. I did exactly what you told me. Yeah, I won matches, but I'm not happy. This ain't me. And then you can't have him feud with Chad Gable because it looks like he could eat Chad Gable. You have to have Chad Gable get another guy in that Alpha Academy that's big so he could destroy Otis in a sneak attack or something. And then we're all rooting for Otis again, right? We got the lovable guy back again saying, I got led astray by an idiot because I'm not too bright. And I never did really relish what I was doing anyway, but I wanted to be successful, and now he's got this other big asshole that nobody likes, and I'm going to beat that guy up. And there you go. It's not hard. But when they have no motivation, when there is no fleshing out of a character, and when you do flesh the character out, you ruin it. There you go. Look back at the Rusev thing. We never even knew why Lana cheated on him, let alone why she was rubbing it in his face. We never even knew. Could you not have given us a thing where, you know, she felt left out of the whole Rusev Day thing, or she got word that he was cheating on her, or she just got jealous of him, or something's up? No, it's just there's no motivation. It's just like tomorrow Bobby Lashley could come out and say, okay, well, you know what? I just enrolled in college, and I'm going to be a veterinarian. So from now on, I'm walking out with animals. I'm going to be like a Dr. Seuss. And you'd be like, okay, well, why is that? What the hell happened? And then you come up with this harebrained. Let me tell you who the most valuable player is on SmackDown right now. Surprise, it's not Roman Reigns. Surprise, it's not even Paul Heyman. It might be Baron Corbin, because you give him shit, and he at least makes a poor applesauce with it. This is a shit character, and I'll tell you why it's a shit character, despite the fact that it's fun to watch. It doesn't make any sense. You couldn't possibly win that much money in Las Vegas in one night. You couldn't possibly do it. The casino would go bankrupt. You're not hitting $20 million in Las Vegas in one night with 35 bucks. You're not doing it. Hell, you'd have been better off saying he lost all of his money except a dollar and won a scratch-off and won $10 million than you would saying he won on the casinos in Las Vegas. So he won enough in 1 week that he bought two cars, a whole new whatever, going to pay $100,000 for a briefcase. How much money did he win? It doesn't make any sense. Now, to his credit, this character is fun. Happy Corbin is fun. He got a whole new look. He's got a whole new attitude. He's a little bit like the Million Dollar Man, but not really. And I got news for you. He's pulling it off great, but it's based on garbage, and that's why it's not going to work. Whoever wrote it said, I got an idea. He'll hit it big in Las Vegas in one night with $35. Someone should have said, well, no, because no one's going to believe that. No one's going to believe that. We're going to have to do something better than that. Let's show him, trying to win in Las Vegas and getting down to his last dollar and say, well, I'm not going to pour that dollar into the machine again. I'll just play, you know, a scratch-off or something. All I got money for is a scratch-off, and you win, like, you know, $1 million on that, the $1 million jackpot. Or at least show that he got some money a little bit at a time. In other words, yeah, I won $100,000 at the casino. I'm starting to get back to myself again. Don't make him Happy Corbin right away. I got a little money now. I'm doing a little better. I'm going back to the casino. And then pretty soon he can't lose. You know, he's the luckiest guy in the world. He's hitting the tables. He's doing this. Show those vignettes. Show him week after week after week. I win again. I win again. I win again. I can't lose. Watch. I'll close my eyes and pick a number on the roulette wheel. And that came up. Look, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I can't lose. I'll bet on the highest odds, you know, thing going. And he wins. And it should have been Lucky Corbin. See, that would have been better than Happy Corbin. Should have been Lucky Corbin. You say, well, how much luck could the man possibly have? He's putting, you know, money on the highest odds on the table. He's winning. Show him with a poker hand, you know, where he's got the highest card he's got is a nine. And everybody else is pocket aces and stuff. And he still wins because he draws the two other nines. And people just say, well, Jesus, how lucky can you possibly be? He can't lose. Everything he does, he wins. It's like his fortune has turned around completely. And then you call him Lucky Corbin, not Happy Corbin. And Todd, that would have been a million times better.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they shouldn't call him Happy Corbin. They should call him Lucky Corbin. And I wouldn't have him go to the casino to win money back. I would have him go to like a convenience store to win, get buy himself buy a lottery ticket, then win $1 million. That's the way I would have done that as well.
Could have started it there. At least he could have said, you know, I had to eat. I only got $2 left to my name. I'm going to buy a scratch-off. Hey, I won $1,000. Maybe I'll take that $1,000 and hit the casino. Oh, look, I turned my $1,000 into $5,000. Each week you could have had a new vignette. Him at the horse races saying, what's that 100-to-1 shot? I think I'll put $5,000 on him and have some guy saying, are you kidding me? I could beat that horse in a foot race. And he wins. And the guy just say, you're the luckiest guy in the world. I just don't understand. You can't lose. And that's his new gimmick. I can't lose. And you could have took that into the wrestling ring where he wins by some lucky means here and there. And he's just, I'm on the luckiest streak of my life. Everything's coming up for me. That would have been a great character. Instead, they've decided on this Happy Corbin, and he gets everything back in one night, Mike. And again, they've told the story way too fast.
You know, I'll put it to you this way. How many vignettes did they do with Kurt Hennig before they debuted him in the ring? How many vignettes
right.
did they do with him? You know,
a lot.
Shooting a basketball, shooting pool, hitting a baseball, throwing a football, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was week after week after week after week of these vignettes of Kurt Hennig doing, you know, different things. And you could have absolutely do that. I'll put it to you another way. We all know about the whole series of movies with Vacation, you know, with Chevy Chase and Vacation, you know, where they go on vacation. One of them was Vegas Vacation. At the end of the movie, they're sitting there with Mel Brooks, and they're playing, I believe it's Keno they're playing or something, and Mel Brooks wins. Now, this is after Chevy Chase's character has lost all their money at different casinos, and he's saying, I'm a lucky guy because I married Beverly D'Angelo's character and all that stuff. So it's like, okay, so what happens is they decide that with one of their last dollars to buy a Keno ticket, okay? And they do all these numbers and they lose, but Mel Brooks' character wins. And what happens after that is, well, the excitement of winning is so high for Mel Brooks' character that he has a heart attack and dies, but he ends up giving the ticket to the Griswold family. Well, that's a lucky thing because the guy dies, you get his ticket, right?
Yeah. Well, could you imagine the vignette they've done, Mike? Okay, so you say he got lucky with a scratch-off, big deal. Okay, he won some money at the casino, big deal. Okay, he won a long shot in a horse race, big deal. But you could have graduated to ridiculous things where he's at the casino, leaving the casino saying, I want another $100,000, and some guy coming out there saying, listen, if you're so lucky, I'll bet you that $100,000 against my $100,000 that, or against my car that what, the next person walking out of that casino, next girl walking out of that casino, what color dress is she going to wear? If you're right, I'll give you $100,000 or I'll give you my car or whatever. And he'd say, actually, the next person out there, I think, is going to be wearing a bunny suit. And he'd say, oh, that's ridiculous. Ain't nobody in here with a bunny suit. And there would come somebody out with a bunny suit. And it's just ridiculous. You can't lose. I've never seen anybody that lucky. That should have been the whole narrative. I've never seen anybody as lucky as you. You're the luckiest person in the world. You could have had great vignettes with him just showing how lucky he was. Nope. Instead, he has to win it all back in one night, and he's happy now. I don't like it. I like the Lucky Corbin thing because that would have been so much more fun because then you could have seen some things happening in wrestling too where you say, well, that was flat lucky. He won that match, but how lucky can you get? He wasn't going to win it. and this happened. And he could just say, that's my lucky streak. It just keeps running. And if you built him up for, like, a title shot, you'd make people believe, well, how's he going to lose? He never does lose. He's going to win somehow. And that would have been fascinating. It would have been a really fun character. So right now you got a pretty good character played by a guy who's doing a great job. Remember when I told you? I said I saw Baron Corbin in that commercial where he said, this isn't what I meant by a biker, and he comes out with a suit and stuff. And I said, that guy's actually a pretty good actor. He could actually pull off some other characters. Well, he's doing this one very well. I like the outfit. I like his mannerism. I like everything about it. But Happy Corbin is not as good as Lucky Corbin. I'm telling you, Lucky Corbin was the way to go. I can't lose. Imagine the T-shirts you could have had for that. Nobody's going to buy a Happy Corbin T-shirt, but Lucky? How lucky can you get T-shirt or whatever with Corbin? Yeah, people would like that kind of stuff. Keep the vignettes rolling for a month. Each week, he's lucky again. Each week, something else happens that you say, well, how lucky can you be? Perfect. That's your catchphrase. Each week, somebody says, how lucky can one person be? And then he just turns to the camera with that goofy smile and says, what can I tell you? Lucky Corbin. Perfect. Perfect. Anyway, the rest of SmackDown was not great. We got this weird thing where Paul Heyman is afraid of confronting Roman because he thinks Roman's going to be mad at him about the Brock Lesnar thing. And instead, Roman is just like it never happened. Now, we don't know whether Roman is bluffing him, saying, I don't trust you anymore. I think you did it on purpose, but I'm not going to show that. Or whether Roman's really like that, I don't know, but it didn't play into anything this week anyway because all we got was Finn Balor coming out and challenging Roman Reigns. Like, anybody cares. Yeah, that's what's going to happen, all right. Finn Balor's going to take the title from Roman Reigns. John Cena's not going to do it. Nobody else is going to do it. It's just going to be Finn Balor, sure. And by the way, I thought you just said you wanted big guys in wrestling. Well, now you got Finn Balor on SmackDown going for a championship match. He's as big as Roman Reigns' leg. This is the problem. Why couldn't Balor just stay where he was? Balor was doing fine in NXT. Did he move the needle? Let me ask you that question. Did Finn Balor, who everyone says he's so wonderful, he's so fantastic, did he move the needle 1 inch? Did SmackDown ratings go up when he was the champion? No. They did not. I mean, not SmackDown, NXT. Did NXT ratings go up when he was the champion? No. So there you go. He's not a needle mover. He's not a guy who's putting butts in seats. I always told you that. But for some reason, he's always in the title picture. He's always on top. He's got very little personality, if any. The only thing he has going for him is that demon character, which he's way too small for, and he doesn't even play well because once he does do the entrance, everything else is exactly the same. It's not like he's a totally different character. He wrestles exactly the same. So, please. Now, Mick Foley didn't do that. Mick Foley did not wrestle the same as Cactus Jack as he did as Mick Foley or Mankind or Dude Love. He mixed it up. So, once again, it's just I don't think that helps. So now on SmackDown, and we get the little bit of a tease that Dominic Mysterio may be having enough of his father's interference. However, again, that's a little bit illogical because Ray didn't do anything. Yeah, Ray said, I won't come out. I'm going to let you fly on your own. And then he came out, but he didn't interfere. He didn't do any of that. If the whole story you're telling is, I'm never going to get out from behind Rey Mysterio's shadow being his son, the story to tell is a very simple one. Rey Mysterio realizes my son resents me. You know, you don't have Dominic be a mean, horrible guy. You don't have, I never want to talk to you again. I'm never getting out of your shadow. No, you have Dominic say, I don't think I'm cut out to be a pro wrestler. Because I'll never get out of your shadow, Dad. I'll never be as good as you. You can say I will be all you want, but I know me and I know you, and I'm never going to be you. I'm never going to be as good as you, and no one will ever accept me. I'm Rey Mysterio's son, and I'm not as good as you. And that leads to a match between Rey and Dominic where Rey says, you prove yourself. Beat your old man in a match. And Rey lets him win. Not so it's real obvious, but he lets him win. And that leads to Dominic having a big head, saying, I beat my own father, and he's a legend. I can beat anybody, blah, 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 blah. And then Rey trying to warn him and saying, look, I never wanted to have to tell you this, but I let you win. I let you win. I let you win because I didn't want you to quit. And him saying, that's because you're jealous of me because you're old and washed up, and now you're trying to make me feel bad. You didn't let me win. There's so much you could do with that where Rey finally says, fine, you want to fight? Let's fight. And I'm not going to let you win this time. Earn it. There's so much there. Instead, they're just, oh, Dominic's being a bitch. Well, Dominic being a bitch is not going to help, Mike. We have to be able to see that there's some realism in it.
Right, and it really doesn't help. And I mean, there's a theory, and I've seen this theory addressed on different TV shows that, you know, up to a certain point, your father is better than you at everything, right? Basketball, whatever. As you're growing up. Well, and then there's a certain point when you end up you're better than your father and you can beat him. Well,
right.
Do that. Play into that. You know, play into that. And here's something else to think about. Dominic is young. He hasn't filled out yet. You know, he's what? 210 pounds maybe? Maybe.
He's pretty,
you know,
a little more.
He's over 6'2", but he can put on a little bit more weight. He can become one of those mid-range guys, you know, a 225, 230-pound guy, you know, that, you know, and for the future, for his future, you know. And
yeah, and if he followed exactly what I said, Mike, you wouldn't have to make him a heel. He'd be a little bit of a heel for a month or two. He'd have a chip on his shoulder. I beat my legendary father. I'm one of the best wrestlers here. You couldn't beat my legendary father. You couldn't beat him. You couldn't until Rey said, look, I've led you into a false sense of security. I led my son into a trap. You're going to get in over your head thinking if you beat me, you can beat everybody, and I let you win. That way, when they have their match and Rey really doesn't let him win, and Dominic does, in fact, win, then you can have Rey, you know, Dominic can say, I need you to tell me. Father to son, you didn't let me win that match. And no, you won it on your own. And then Dominic realizes I've become as good as my father. And they embrace, and that's it. Dominic's a good guy again and says, I won't let it go to my head. I was stupid. I was young. And you've taught me. This is the best lesson you've taught me. And then you have it. You have Dominic as the face if that's what you want. But the bottom, or you have him cheat to win on his father and you keep him a heel. It doesn't matter. It's branches on the tree. But nonetheless, it's an emotional thing that people can connect with. Rey did a selfless thing. He let his son win so his son wouldn't quit the business. His son now thinks he's better than everybody because he beat Rey. Rey decides my son's going to get hurt with this philosophy, so I got to tell him the truth. He tells him the truth. His son rejects the truth. So they build up to that big match where his son does, in fact, win or cheat to win and either goes back to being a face and realizes my dad did the best thing he could for me or becomes an unbearable heel who says, yeah, you know, I won by any means necessary, and that's all that counts. It doesn't matter. The idea behind it is it's an angle we can believe in. In other words, we can sympathize with both sides. We can say, well, see, the kid got a big head. I might get a big head, too. I understand what Rey was trying to do, but he probably shouldn't have let him win. There's a lot of things in there you can identify with. I don't identify with this. He just looks like a little bitch saying, no, you lost legitimately. So I don't like it. The same way with the Corbin thing. I don't like it because it's illogical. You're not going to win that much money in one night. That casino's done. All of a sudden, he's a multi-millionaire. How many multi-millionaires do you know happen one night in Las Vegas? Doesn't happen. And you missed all that opportunity of all those great skits and everything else. Also illogical is that Roman Reigns doesn't even bring up Brock Lesnar. The least he could have done was to say, I need you to do me one favor. I need you to look me dead in the eye and tell me, Brock Lesnar coming there, you had no idea. And then when Paul says it, okay, take the belt, come on, your family, you're coming with me. That's fine. I see what angle they're going with. They're going with Brock Lesnar's going to fight Roman Reigns, probably at Saudi Arabia. I'm against that angle. I was way, way, way more happy if they were going to have Brock Lesnar show up and say, I bet you thought I was getting in that ring to challenge you. I'm not getting in that ring to challenge you. That's my best friend who's holding your belt. He's making big money off you. But, Paul, you could be making big money off me, too, because there's another belt to be had, and that's Bobby Lashley. Man, you'd have had something, because you have so much stuff in there where it's like, is Paul going to be the manager of both champions? We're going to get to see Lashley against Lesnar. That should be great. Roman Reigns is still jealous over Brock Lesnar because maybe Paul's going to be spending a lot of time there and he's not kissing Roman's ass every minute. There's a lot of meat on the bone for something like that, Todd, and it looks like they threw that away too and they're just going for a one-off match.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said. I would have Lesnar just go after Lashley of the WWE Championship, and then you have that match at Survivor Series, the WWE Champion versus the Universal Champion. Build that up like they do every
eventually it leads to that, exactly. Eventually it leads to Roman and Brock, and then you say, well, who's Paul going to side with? Don't tell the story so quick. Now, Brock, from what I hear, is signed a year-and-a-half deal, and it involves 8 matches and then TV appearances. Well, 8 matches in a year-and-a-half is a lot more than he normally does. 8 matches in a year-and-a-half is about 1 every 2 months. So that's more than adequate to do this angle, Mike, if they wanted to do it. And I'm just surprised they're telling the story so quick.
Right, and I've said this about this whole situation. You know, with Paul Heyman, we all know what Paul Heyman's about, making the most money, making Paul Heyman look good for Paul Heyman, right? And with this doing this the way they're doing it, that doesn't fit that. You know, with the way we were talking about it, you know, you're going to make money off of Roman Reigns, you're going to make money off of the Usos, you're going to make money possibly off of Naomi, and you're going to definitely make money off of Brock Lesnar if they do it the way we think they should do it, right?
Yeah, Mike, and think about this. Could you imagine if you just get Brock Lesnar to deliver one line, one good line, he could say when they start really getting tense with each other, he could say, look, I believe you're the head of the table. You're the head of your family. You're putting the meat on the table. But you're not the guy putting the meat on Paul's table. I'm the guy who puts the meat on Paul's table, and I have for a long time. So you're not the head of that table. That would be good, because then Roman could be like, you know, that there's a point there. He made Paul a lot of money for a long period of time. He ain't the head of Paul's table, and Paul ain't family. And there's some tension to be had there, Mike. There's so much more story to tell, and they always seem to just want to jump to the end of the chapter.
Right, and look. And look, I'll go back to what we were talking about earlier with the cluster that was the whole meeting between Sonya Deville and Naomi. They messed that thing up really bad. I mean, that could have been really good. That could have been a really good setup, you know?
Absolutely. Oh, it could have been brilliant. And let me ask you a question. If Elias has to lose to Jackson Riker because you're going to be pushing Jackson Riker, where the hell is he? Where the hell is he? So you destroyed the Elias character for what reason? Because I don't see Jackson Riker doing anything. So once again, you did it for no reason. You got nothing out of it. If you really wanted to promote Rick Boogs or whatever, how come he couldn't come in there as a former bandmate or something of Elias and start a feud? Anything. It doesn't really matter. Shinsuke Nakamura, it doesn't even make any sense for him to be with Shinsuke Nakamura. It's just such thrown together hishkabibble. It's like one day Bobby Lashley comes out with a belly dancer. What the hell does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. Why bother? It's silly. Now, SmackDown this week wasn't horrible, but it certainly missed a lot of chances. With the Rey Mysterio thing, I think they're going in the right direction in the wrong way. That's what the WWE does so much. It's the right direction. You get into it wrong. With Naomi, it's the right direction, but you're getting to it wrong. That's the problem. Whoever comes up with this is where we want to get to, you're right. That's where you want to get to. Now, how do you get there? And that's where they're screwing it up. As far as the Becky Lynch thing, I don't know what they want to do with her. If they're making her a heel, she's certainly not a super heel. She's going to be these in the eye of the beholder type thing. The gray area heel. Because she didn't do anything heelish, really. She turned down Bianca Belair for the match, but that's not super heelish, really. She just said, nah, not tonight. She didn't attack anybody. She didn't do anything bad. She didn't even say anything bad. In fact, she said she missed everybody. So, I mean, if she was going to come out here and be your top heel, you don't come out and say, I've missed you guys so much. You don't say that. So I don't know what they're doing with her. They probably called an audible there. They probably said, we're going to make you heal, and said, it ain't going to work. The fans like you too much. We're going to have to wait. We'll do it slow. I don't know what they're doing. Not sure what they're doing. And I don't know why you give Shinsuke Nakamura a title if you're just going to tag team him every week with Rick Boons. How is that helping your title? What the hell's the point? Then win the tag team titles. To hell with this title. Keep it around Apollo's waist. He needed it more than Shinsuke if you're going to try to make Shinsuke and Boons a tag team. So there's a lot wrong, and it just seems direction-wise. That's the problem. Todd, it was entertaining, but, I'm going to give it D-. It wasn't that entertaining, and I think they made some really unforced errors.
I got to go with the same grade with you as well.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. Certain parts of it I like, but...
Yeah, I got to go. I'll give it a little bit better and give it a D, just a flat D. But like you said,
okay.
Direction-wise is they get there, but they get there in odd ways.
Not only odd ways, but bad ways. If you're saying to me, I eventually want Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, gotcha. Bad boy out. We eventually want Dominic to turn on Ray, gotcha. But let's stretch this bad boy out. We want Baron Corbin to be the luckiest guy in the world and hit jackpots and things. Great, let's stretch this out. We want Naomi to be mistreated, but they don't think they're mistreating her. So it's up to the eye of the beholder. Great, then do it the right way. You're not doing any of this the right way. You're getting where you're supposed to go, but you're doing it wrong. It's a shame. It really is. We'll see what happens Monday night. We'll be back here Tuesday to tell you about it.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.